knew if I wouldn't, I feel good.
I feel good because Baratunde Thurston joins us now to offer some advice based on one of his main areas of expertise. Besides being a stand-up comedian, founder of the website Jack and Jill Politics, and digital director for The Onion, Baratunde has more than 30 years' experience being black, hence his new book, How to Be Black. Baratunde, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's always good to be here. Just a light but important correction, co-founder of Jack and Jill Politics.
With?
Cheryl Conti,
okay.
Who is featured prominently in How to Be Black.
So is this a guide for wannabes, for people who are not currently black but want to change their race to black?
So if you want to change your race, you're going to need a lot more science and risky engineering than a hard or digital cover book could provide. So this will not convert you into a black person. I want to make that very clear. Though, as Cheryl said in the book, we can all be a bit blacker. And so this is in the spirit of a better understanding without actual racial transformation.
So you've written a book on how to be black for black people. Is that like writing a book for Mitt Romney on how to be part of the 1%?
Maybe it's the 0.001% for Mitt. The book is definitely not just for black people. I think it's for those who are friends with black people, those who want to be friends with black people, those who've heard of black people. So it's really a universally accessible book. And when you get down to it, it's ultimately how to be. There is no actual specific way to be black, but I explore, even within the bounds of that ridiculousness, that there are a few guideposts along the way.
And you have highly useful chapters in the book, like how to be the black friend.
Yeah, it's a very important role.
How to be the angry Negro.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you gotta get mad.
How to speak for all black people.
Which many black people are called upon to do every single day in ways both great and small.
Did your experience going to a mostly white high school teach you how to be the black friend?
Absolutely. I was not familiar with this concept. I grew up in Washington, D.C., in the Columbia Heights neighborhood, and which has transformed itself pretty dramatically over the past decade. And I ended up going to the Sidwell Friends School starting in seventh grade. I've been in public school before then. And I was not used to being a minority at all, especially in D.C. I mean, my neighborhood was black and brown, and so you kind of go to the other side of town, and it's a whole different cultural, class, and racial environment. And so I sort of, being in the classroom as the black kid, you know, you are just looked at when any topic of blackness were to come up. We could be talking about black lung, and people want to know what I think about the topic. I'm like, I'm not a coal miner, you accidental racist. Like, let's all just calm down a little bit.
Is it a valuable service to white people? Do white people gain something tangible by having a black friend?
Liz, I think that story is actually the one that's told a lot already. The idea of being cooler by proxy because you're nearer and dearer to a black person has been known before. I think what's underestimated is the value that the black friend has to black America. And often within the black community, people get called Oreos and sellouts because they are friends with white people, which can often be a good investment decision. But that person, that covert operative, it's kind of like a Cold War era behind the lines asset, is able to communicate back and forth information and disinformation, improve understanding. My theory is
so having white friends is like being in the CIA.
It's a black CIA. If you are the black friend, you are a member of the black CIA, whether you know it or not. So please keep your mission secret.
There is a pitfall, as you note. Sometimes black people judge other black people negatively for seeming to be enjoying themselves in the company of white people.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the risks of being the black friend is that you're walking a fine line. You don't want to blow your cover, but you also don't want to completely diss your community while you're on the other side of the line. And one of the key ways to do that, you always have to acknowledge other black people. Even if you're out with your white coworkers or friends, you see another black person, give a little head nod, give a little smile, give a little, maybe a wink. Winks are not as standard, but it's all acceptable. Any form of acknowledgement, because black people always see other black people. We can sense each other like vampires and the wealthy.
What intelligence have you gathered over the years as the black friend?
Oh, man. There's some of it's revealed in the book. Some of it is very closely held secrets, and I'm kind of waiting for the right time to just let that stuff out more slowly. I don't want to blow my cover too much on that, Brian. I hope you can respect
Not here me. On public media.
It's just it's a little too public.
What role does touching your hair play in being the black friend?
Ooh, okay. So this is this can be very frustrating for I know black people across the land and maybe the world have experienced this. Sometimes your non-black friends are enamored of and with your hair. And rather than simply asking what it is about it, they reach with their hands. They ask with their bodies. They say, can I touch it? In the act of touching it. And that is that's a little mildly dehumanizing, a little offensive, and also not everybody's hygienic. And so just on a practical level, you know, I've been in bathrooms my whole life. Not everybody washes their hands. And you just don't want that, you know, near your brain. It's a very sensitive part
Wash
of the body.
Wash your hands before you touch my hair without asking me. Is that the rule of thumb?
I would say the rule of thumb is don't touch my hair without asking me. But also wash your hands, independent of whether or not you intend to touch my hair. It's just good practice.
I'll take that to heart. How about explaining your name? Baratunde is so authentically black sounding. Is it like white people being named Michael and Jennifer? Did you grow up with a lot of Baratundes in the neighborhood?
I didn't, and my name has a special twist. I think it's probably like a white person with the name Jennifer, but spelled with a P-H instead of an F.
Hmm.
Baratunde is a derivation of a more common Nigerian name, Babatunde. And according to most of the Nigerians I've ever met, Baratunde's not quite Nigerian. So there's a moment of excitement and then a moment of challenge with like, whoa, where'd you get, what do you mean Baratunde? You mean Babatunde? I'm like, no, I mean the name I have. But the rough translation is the grandfather returns, as in my mother's grandfather, or one who was chosen. So it's a pretty deep name.
Baratunde Thurston from The Onion and Jack and Jill Politics and his new book, How to Be Black. Is one of the jobs of being a black friend to approve of your white friend's musical tastes?
Yeah, you're definitely called upon. I mean, here's the thing. Jonah Peretti and his sister years ago set up a great site called Black People Love Us. And they had a lot of examples. I actually contributed unofficially to that site many years ago, but you're just kind of expected to know things. You're expected to know your entire people's history. You're expected to know all celebrity gossip, sports information, what's hot and what's not. You're basically the website, hot or not for cool, for all your white friends from time to time.
An example you give in the book is Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana. So we pulled that song from a legitimate copyright protected website. So walk us through this. Let's say I'm the white friend and I say, Baratunde, dude, man.
Dude and man, you gotta stop right there.
Check this out. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, this song, actually this band, caused me no shortage of tumult when I was in high school. This was Nirvana, the 90s grunge, very much at the time seen as quote-unquote white people music, which is already a problematic term, but I loved it. And I was introduced to it by some non-black friends, and I said, you know what, this is really good. And if you listen to it, you hear the beat, you hear the rhythm, you hear the angst and the pain. I mean, Nirvana is like a very bluesy band, and they've got good beats in it. So I think this is one of the best songs ever, even though it's made by very grungy white people out of Seattle.
Yeah, it shares something beneath the surface with James Brown.
There's a soulfulness to Nirvana, man. I will defend this to the death. I love that band.
All right. Now, listeners, it's not often that you have the opportunity for free advice, but this is one of those opportunities. If you are black and would like some advice on how to be black, Baratunde Thurston is here for you. Call him up at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or if you are not black and want to know anything about being black, Baratunde is prepared, as the book makes clear, to speak for all black people. One of the roles of any black person in America is to speak for all black people on the show today. You are prepared to do that, right? So
sure.
You can call to, if you're not black, you cannot touch his hair.
No, absolutely not.
But he will speak about being black on behalf of all black people. 212
limited time offer.
433-WNYC. And black people, free advice right here on how to be black. 212-433-9692. We'll take your calls for Baratunde Thurston in a minute. We'll be right back. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Baratunde Thurston, digital director for The Onion and co-founder of the website Jack and Jill Politics, with his new book, How to Be Black. And before we go to our very busy phones, I just want to set up this concept a little bit more of part of the call-in that we've offered, because related to your chapter on how to be a black friend that we've been discussing is the one called How to Speak for All Black People. And you know, you're just one guy. So how could you speak for all black people, like from Ghana or something?
It's a question without a legitimate answer. The point is to be prepared to speak for all black people, because sometimes you're going to find yourself in an elevator or in a restaurant or at a party or on the radio, and people are going to want to know, well, what do you think of this? And when they say, what do you think of Will Smith's scandal, or what do you think of so-and-so's news event, what they're really saying is, what do all black people think? Like, when they say, what do you think of Obama, what they're really saying is, what do all black people think of President Obama, and are you happy? So it's kind of a mental perspective that you have to wear, because you will be asked, so you might as well know that it's coming and what topics you're expected to address.
Donna in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello. Donna, do we have you? Hi.
I just want to say that Baratunde, you have already helped me become a better black person.
Oh, my goodness. Please share. How did that happen? I'm honored.
Well, my husband is not black, and when we go places, I try not to, acknowledge the black people, because I don't want to get that whole down brown thing going.
Ah.
So I just try to blend in and be a part of, you know, society as a whole. And I realize that, you know, maybe I am doing a disservice to someone. I'm not sure who, but from now on, I'm going to start acknowledging black people, you know, when I see them in various situations.
You know,
I understand it's important.
It is important, and I thank you so much for calling. Big up to the boogie down, as they say, BX. And I want to just relate a quick story. I interviewed a number of people for the book, one of whom was Derek Ashong, who's a good friend and a leader of the band Solfege. And he described, you know, your situation down of, you know, increased intermixing. And he said, you know, we're going to have brown babies popping out from everywhere. Kids don't know whether to go to church on Friday or Saturday or Sunday, so they just go to the club. So you and your husband, enjoy yourself at the club, and also acknowledge other black and brown people.
Right.
No shame in
Will
your
do.
Game, Donna.
Donna.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Stay
but
black.
But
Stay
you
black.
Do say in the book that a black friend can occasionally prank his white friends, keep them on their toes by playing the race card just for fun. What's an example of that?
Oh, man. So you can always just add "because I'm black" to any kind of statement. So if someone offers you a slice of cake, but it's after they offered someone else a slice of cake. Oh, did you offer me that slice of cake later because I'm black? Is that what this is? Like, I'm a second-class citizen. You can offer me the slice of cake after you offer Jim the slice of cake. And it's just, you know.
And then everybody gets all tense.
Oh, the tension is so much fun. It's palpable. And then you laugh and they laugh. And it's a really good time had by all. You got to be able to honestly pierce. You know, we have such a tense environment around race and talking about it in this country. You got to have some fun with it. And so one of the mild privileges of being black in this country is to be able to have fun with your white friends. So do it.
Darlene in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Baratunde Thurston. Hello.
Hello. I am so loving this program, and I will have to get your book, but I just wanted to share. My daughter, she's 23, and she's always telling me, Ma, you need more black friends. I'm like, what are you talking about? We have a large family. My family members don't count. Yet she's telling me, I need more black friends. I will buy your book. I will tell everybody about your book. I'm loving this show. I just wanted to
thank you so much. And as a fellow Brooklynite, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you,
Darlene. You too, Darlene.
Donald in Cold Spring, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So I just had a quick question. I was wondering what black people think of farmers.
What do black people think of farmers? Black people have a long history with farming.
I know.
Obviously, involuntarily at first. But then we were good at it.
You are asking somebody who grew up in Washington, D.C. and lives in Brooklyn, but go ahead.
So one of the things you have to understand, Brian, and
because you would know how black people in general.
The point is not to know things. The point is to sound like you know things, Brian.
Uh-huh.
And being in the radio business, I would have thought you would have learned that by now.
Like everybody else in every other field.
Exactly. So as a part of being prepared to speak for all black people, I'm going to answer this question even though I've never lived on a farm. Black people love food like most people. We need it every day to survive and sustain ourselves in this world because we are human biological life forms. And as such, we love farms. Plus, there's actually, importantly, one of the other people I interviewed in the book, Jaquetta Zabmari, grew up in a rural area. There is a deep relationship, more legitimately and honestly, of black farmers in this country. Actually, one of the groups of small business owners that's really struggling, not only in this economy, but with big agribusiness and with the kind of long history of explicit discrimination against their rights as business people and really as human beings. So to not just be joking around with it, black farming and farming in general is actually quite important, not only to the nation, but to the black community in this nation in particular. So thank you so much, Mr. Cold Spring Dude.
Any other not black people who want to ask Baratunde to speak for all black people, he's making a limited time offer that I think is good for another 12 minutes. Pat in Springfield, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. Listen, as a middle-aged white guy, I just trying to figure out how somebody like Stuart Scott on ESPN can still throw down all sorts of 20-something phrases and get away with it where I have no shot whatsoever to be passable cool at my age saying the same stuff.
So what we all have to understand is that the rules of decency, common sense, maybe even ethics don't quite apply to ESPN. They are a special entity unto themselves. This is a network that
transcends
rules. It transcends journalism. So ESPN is a special case. They're as in bed with the industry they cover as any, you know, I've ever seen throughout the history of media recorded or live. So Stuart Scott being a part of ESPN, he gets a pass on just about everything, as does ESPN itself.
Pat, thank you very much. But his question is a variation on the eternal white perception that blacks are cool no matter what they do.
Yeah. No, there is that. It's kind of a fun, you know, when you look at the actual statistics and lived experience of black people in this country, being cool is an intangible benefit. But then there's also the other, like, burdens of being black here. And I don't know if cool fully outweighs, you know, mortgage discrimination, for example. But it's something to be able to hold on to. And it goes back quite a long way, especially culturally.
Baratunde Thurston, author of How to Be Black. And you offer a kind of toolkit in your book on how to speak for all black people in the media. And your first tip there is be male.
Yeah. This is
really?
Here's the good news. The media is getting slightly and more slowly better at this, but I think the main news media would be very happy if they could just have an occasional national black press conference. You know, there's this yearning to simplify matters down to who's the spokesperson this time? Is it Farrakhan? No, that's a little too dated. It's definitely not Sharpton anymore. What happened to Reverend Jackson? And so if they could just more simply call a press conference every quarter.
The one person
to simply answer all these questions about what all black people think. Now, here's the good news. That system of centralized credibility and authority is slipping a little bit. And, you know, you have blogs. I mean, I'm also making fun of myself in this chapter because I'm a blogger and a pseudo-pundit type figure. And the more people have the ability to fully express themselves and authentically express themselves, the better the world is and the more true we can be to ourselves and the more true a perception others can have of us.
Melissa Harris-Perry isn't male. Doesn't her existence disprove your advice?
Listen, actual evidence is really not the relevant fact here, Ryan.
Not the thing.
I'm making statements, okay, and those statements are powerful.
You've been following the political campaigns, I see.
I have tried to avoid them.
You also suggest that people speak clearly but don't enunciate too well.
So there is, and this goes back to the cool factor. This is one of the troubling aspects of the images of blackness that have gotten out there so much. If you sound too educated, if you sound like you got your stuff together too much, sometimes black people, sometimes non-black people alike will say, hey, well, you're not really black. Look at you. You're all achieving and successful and articulate, you know, is one of those fun code words, which is both a compliment and a criticism.
Roy in Kearney, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, how all you guys.
Good morning, Roy.
And thanks for taking my call. I have one question. You know, I recognize that the human experience for the particular group, quote-unquote, so-called blacks or African-Americans or Negroes, throughout the decades, we have changed labels from decade to decade. Right. Is this book addressing a particular period in time, or is it all-encompassing going back from Reconstruction up until now? Because no other group has had the experience of changing their identity tag over decades as have we. So I would like to suggest, haven't we graduated to just being human beings, given all those labels we carry throughout the times?
Excellent question, Roy. And I'll set several questions. I'll try to quickly get into all of them. Thanks a lot for calling. So the book itself covers mostly my life. And so I wasn't alive during Reconstruction, so I didn't go back that far. I do reflect on my family's history. My great-grandfather's about as far back as I go, but I am sort of a child of the 80s and the 90s, and then talking and projecting into the future. To your point of rebranding of, you know, Negro, African-American, black, and the future of how we see ourselves and how others see us, I think you hit on the core point of the book. You know, I called the book How to Be Black. One, it's a strong title. Two, it's fun, and I'm trying to play with humor and legitimacy here. But the book is really how to be. You know, just to give away the punchline, like, I think you'll enjoy if you decide to read it. I didn't ruin it for you. It's not, you know, I'm not killing the joke there, but finding yourself, whatever that is, and being black by happenstance is enough. There's no actual way to be black, Roy. That's ridiculous. And for anybody who's picking that up, I hope that's not the message you get away from. So really being yourself, whether you're black or how to be Jewish or how to be gay, that's the part that we have an ability to better express now than we ever did during Reconstruction or the phase of Negro and the African-American and the more historical times. The future, hopefully, is a bit brighter for all identities and all groups.
Elizabeth in Putnam County, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi. I have a question. I'm white. I have friends that are black. One of my friends that's black is not African-American.
Yeah.
He's completely Jamaican. And he even often says, why is every black person referred to as African-American when he's not African-American? And so am I allowed to, like, say black instead of African-American?
You know, that's...
Without insulting anybody?
So I don't think it's possible to say anything without insulting somebody. So just lower the bar for a little bit and maybe don't feel so bad about it. I personally am fine with black. I like it.
Okay.
It's strong. It's a single syllable. You can make other words out of it. You can fit it into other things. It's a great modifier. Black magic, black Adler, black strokes, like all kinds of stuff like that. African-American is a bit unwieldy. And also how to be African-American, I felt like that wouldn't pop as much.
Yeah.
So I've become personally very comfortable with just black. I think depending on who you're dealing with, like your friend, you should refer to him probably by his name, I would suppose.
No,
like,
I
don't
do.
Just say, like,
obviously,
hey, black, how you doing today? Like, probably call him, you know, Jerome or whatever his name happens to
you
be.
Know that's
yeah,
what
he'll
I'm
love that.
The next time I see him.
Elizabeth,
yeah,
thank you,
Elizabeth,
very much. Bill from New Rochelle asked on our website, Mr. Thurston.
Ooh, formal.
Yes, it's very, you know, 1% sounding last name, by the way.
It is.
What do all blacks think of Irish music? And we Irish really do love that you always dress with green on St. Patrick's Day. Bump fists.
I appreciate the fist-bumping solidarity. I would have to say that most black people don't think about Irish people or about Irish music, at least in my vast over 30 years of black experience, not one way or the other, positive or negative, not a real point of conversation within the world of blackness that I've been exposed to.
You refer in the book to a time when Rod Blagojevich said he's blacker than Obama.
Yes.
And you were asked to comment on that and declined. Did you want to comment on that now, speaking for all black people, of course?
I mean, I declined then, and I would probably decline now, but with a little comment, and that is, you don't actually always have to have a response. Sometimes the question itself leads to the obvious response, which is, not worth people's time. Probably let's focus on another story. In his case, you know, this is an outlandish figure, has been for quite a time, seeking attention, much like a certain pseudo-millionaire who was very hyped up about birth certificates a while back, and not fully deserving of national media attention. So in that case, I really didn't want to contribute to the wasted airwaves on someone clearly saying something buffoonish.
You quote the comedian Damali Ayo, who said he had a little phase in college of wanting to be Korean. Do black people sometimes not want to be black?
You know, that the answer is yes. And when I asked these people, and I asked only 7 people that I interviewed for this book, 3 black men, 3 black women, and 1 white male for kind of a control group purposes. This is all science, ultimately. I interviewed Christian Lander from Stuff White People Like. And Damali's kind of surprised me, saying she wanted to be Korean for a while. And I think for many black people, there is a moment, at least one, where you're like, oh, man, I wish I could so not be black right now. But it's rarely in my findings and life personally been a categorical, like, I want to walk away from blackness permanently. It's more like, while I'm applying for this particular position, maybe I don't want to be black. Or while I'm getting hit with all these questions to speak for everybody, I'd like to be something other than who I am.
So we've got 20 seconds left. Yeah. If I don't buy this book, am I a racist?
That's how it works. If you do buy it, it doesn't guarantee you're not, though. And the most important thing I want to say is this book is the beginning of a conversation. How to Be Black is a party. You're all invited. Check out howtobeblack.me. We're asking a question a day about identity, whether you're black or not. So share your story and let's move the ball forward. Stay black, y'all.
Baratunde Thurston, How to Be Black. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.